Hey, welcome to an episode of CineNation. Tonight's episode, we're going to have me, Thomas Horton, here in Los Angeles, and I'm here with Hunter Barcroft.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
It'll just be the two of us tonight. Ben and Brandon weren't able to make it, so Hunter and I got to pick the topic tonight, and we wanted to talk about Westerns. So we're going to, you know, be going into some classic Westerns, some remakes, some upcoming Westerns that are about to hit theater soon, and you know,
The Revenant is the only thing that matters at this point. Let's be real.
Yeah, Revenant. Since Ben's not here, we're going to talk about Sweatpants Guy, Quentin Tarantino, and we'll talk about Hateful Eight a little bit. And it should be fun. So let's get started, Hunter. We'll do Brandon's normal thing. What have you been watching
lately? Other than repeat upon repeat of the Adele Hello music video, I finally finished Master of None, put it off for a little bit, and then came back and finished it. I had like one episode to go.
I think I'm like four in right now.
It gets really good. The Parents, you've probably seen Parents already. That's a great episode. That's a great episode of television. That and Indians on television. Indians on TV.
Yeah, I think that's the next one I've got. I'm close. I'm for my Thanksgiving binge, I'm doing Jessica Jones.
So, I want to start that up. It looks really good. I got high hopes.
I think it's I'll say better than Daredevil, but
really, that's bold. That's bold. Yeah, speaking of Thanksgiving binges, I went out to my family Thanksgiving, like I always do every year, and my grandmother was nowhere to be found. So she lives in like a downstairs finished off area of the house that we go out to see everyone. Mm-hmm. And I go down there and she's glued to the television watching a John Wayne marathon. And she goes, "Oh, it's good to see you. John Wayne's been playing all day long. I probably won't come upstairs for very long. I'm just going to watch John Wayne." She literally watched John Wayne movies 90% of the time where everyone was at the house, mostly to see her.
Man.
It was kind of great. It was kind of great. And I think that's part of why I really wanted to talk about Western movies, is because I just thought that was hilarious, and rightfully so. I mean, like, I feel like John Wayne movies to the older generation, and the same with Clint Eastwood movies, are, like, it's like a generational thing, I think, because I know Clint Eastwood movies hit really, like, strongly with my dad, and then
John Wayne is the generation above that.
Yeah, and I'm curious as to what we're going to do, and I think we might get into that a little later, but... Yeah, it's just something that interests me. I was thinking about it today.
You know, that's funny because I did Thanksgiving at Brandon's apartment this week. And,
Bros giving.
Yeah, bros giving, and we actually had the James Bond marathon all day,
ooh,
which this year was just Brosnan Bond. So I was a little disappointed, but
yeah, rightfully so.
We didn't sit around and watch it, but we were playing some board games and would look over and comment on the ridiculous parts of Die Another Day.
Well, pretty much the entire movie is a ridiculous part.
Yeah.
What a stain.
Also, I went last week and saw Legend in theaters, which I really enjoyed. I think I enjoyed it the most out of everyone in our group. Because it has its flaws. It definitely has... It runs a little too long. It's about 2.5 hours. But it's worth it, no matter what like the negative parts are. It's worth it to see Tom Hardy as the brothers because he's incredible.
Do you think Do you think it's Oscar worthy performance from him?
I don't know. There's a lot of solid performances out this year. I don't know if he'd make the cut. He might be up there close. I'd say maybe like a Golden Globe or something. He definitely needs to be recognized, especially for bringing these characters, these very distinct two characters to life. And I don't know much about the backstory. Apparently it's the Kray twins are very famous kind of gangster lore in England, but culturally they just haven't kind of made, their story hasn't made its way over here. But it is, and it's, you know, it's the one, he's got the one that's crazy, literally psychotic, who's got a very interesting voice and this underbite, and he's kind of the more fun character, but the main character is this very suave British gangster, and it's very similar to his character in Inception, but just with a lot more depth to it. But it reminded me a lot of that first character, that which is the first time, other than Bronson, I think Inception was the first time I really noticed him and was like, this guy is,
yeah, he's got same.
Some charm same. There.
Yeah, I, so is one brother in particular more of a main character than the other?
Yeah, yeah, Reggie is kind of the main character. It's told from the point of view of Reggie's wife.
Okay.
And Reggie is the kind of the normal one. I mean, they're both gangsters, but Ron is paranoid schizophrenic and is just really prone to violence and this you know, bad temper and all this. So it's kind of about they have some problems. The script has some problems of where it should focus, but a lot of the story is about Reggie trying to kind of legitimize his life, but he's got the burden of his kind of mentally ill gangster brother kind of weighing on him the whole time, and it keeps dragging him back into crime. So
that sounds, yeah, the amazing
kind of the Reggie character definitely plays, he plays him a lot more, but I think Ron is the one that will get him a lot of attention because it's definitely the more unique role.
You think he could slide into supporting best supporting actor race with the one brother?
Yeah, that would be good if they gave him that for Ron. That would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious as to how that would work. I don't think I've ever seen that happen or heard of it.
I'm trying to think now. Did Nicolas Cage get nominated for anything for adaptation? Because that would be the only other time I could really think of that.
Not sure.
I mean, Lindsay Lohan didn't get any nominations for I Know Who Killed Me, which, you know.
Oh, yeah. When this episode goes out, people have already heard of the greatness that is I Know Who Killed Me.
Yep.
Because of us. Ugh. What a terrible.
Let's see. Nick Cage was just nominated for lead actor for the Oscar. And same for the Golden Globe. I guess they don't really specify. Although one of the brothers is definitely more of the Charlie is the more leading brother in that one. But yeah, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I think it's deserving. If it's as good as everyone, I haven't seen it yet, but if it's as good as everyone and you say it is, then.
Yeah, I mean, his performance is incredible. And they've, since the film's come out, they've kind of, the PR, the ads that they've been doing have been focusing on Tom Hardy's performance, which I definitely think is the smart way to go because it's not a flawless film, but he is great.
Yeah, it's not The Martian, but, you know.
It's not The Martian.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like what's a good jumping in point about the Westerns?
I mean, Westerns. You brought up...
Tom Hardy is
John
in The
Wayne. Oh, Tom Hardy is in The Revenant, too. Yeah, you want to jump in there? You want to jump in at the beginning or at the end?
Let's get into Revenant at the end. Let's get into Revenant.
Okay. Work our way up to Revenant.
Let's end on a good note.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to climax too soon.
Okay, so we're going to do the whole history of Westerns squeezed into one podcast episode. So, The Great Train Robbery.
Oh, man. I've seen it, but it was in film school, and not 100% sure I was paying that much attention.
I'm joking. We don't have to start with The Great Train Robbery.
I mean, we can if you want to, Thomas. I think it's
worth it to note that the first real narrative film in America was a Western. That's true.
My dad loved Bonanza growing up. I do remember that.
Oh, yeah.
A big Bonanza fan. Little House on the Prairie.
There's a really interesting, for people who don't, I think, have a grasp on what the Western was like for kind of, yeah, our parents' generation, I would think it compares most to superheroes right now. You've just got, you know, 4 to 5 movies coming out a year, plus upwards of nearly 10 different superhero TV shows on air at one time.
I think that's, if you look at a trajectory point of where superhero movies are going to go, I think if you look at what has become the Western movie, I feel like it might be a similar path. I don't know if there'll be a ton of superhero movie remakes down the line. It might be a long time from now, but I mean, it'll be a while, I think.
Well, and you know, I've heard some people compare the trajectory of the superhero movie to the Western and say the superhero movie is going to die off like the Western. But I mean, the Western hasn't, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it if the Western had died off. It's just not as prominent as it was then. So, you know, I think we will definitely at some point soon see a complete oversaturation of the superhero genre and a downturn. But I don't think we're ever going to, I don't think it'll go away, just like the Western hasn't really gone away.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I think the oversaturation point is going to be this DC Justice League thing spilling out into the world. I don't think it's going to be bad necessarily. I think it's going to be pretty good. But I just feel like it's going to be too much. Too much of a good thing, man. Too much of a good
thing. Yeah, when there's like two, well, I guess three at least. So you've got the Marvel Universe to keep up with. Plus the Fox X-Men universe, plus DC is now introducing to, they're doing a TV and a movie universe. It's a lot to keep up with.
Yeah, it's
the Western, you can say the Western the exact same thing. You know, there's so many different TV shows and some were tied together and some weren't. And, you know, sometimes, you know, John Wayne or Clint Eastwood were making a sequel or sometimes something wasn't tied together at all. You've got the Morricone trilogy, but Clint Eastwood was doing other things in between. So yeah, there's a lot of similarities can be drawn for sure.
Yeah, I wonder if one day people will watch like marathons of the Marvel movies and have that same nostalgia that people like my grandmother felt about the John Wayne movies. Like I wonder if one day I'm gonna be like, oh my gosh, forget my family. There's a Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man marathon on all day long. everyone else can wait. Like, I wonder if that's
gonna be like, back in my day, Robert Downey Jr. was a man's man.
I mean, honestly, I mean, I can't see that happening. I'm not against it, but I just don't. I think time will tell. Time will tell.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you have a favorite John Wayne?
Ooh, I don't know. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is really good.
Mm-hmm.
The Cowboys, where he's in charge of the little kids. That's a great movie. That's a really great movie. But then there's one that I watched as a kid, and I can't remember it for the life of me what the name is. What's your favorite one? I'll come back to it.
Mine's got to be The Searchers.
Ooh, it's a good call.
And you know, if we're continuing this, like... For continuing this cowboy to superhero comparison, I'd say the Searchers kind of brought to the genre what Nolan's Batman did, because everybody had just seen John Wayne as this idyllic American everyman up until then, and then the Searchers came and he was racist and violent and just mean.
Yeah.
And everybody went, oh man, this genre can be dark, and we kind of like it when it's a little bit darker. And I think The Searchers is what started paving the way for Clint Eastwood to show up as the darker.
Yeah, I mean,
cowboy.
It's, I think that shift into the darker side definitely changed that whole, like, it wasn't just Clint Eastwood, like that whole genre shifted to the, like, real dark, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a bad thing necessarily, but I don't know. I wonder what that means. Will it shift back to being that, like, you know, titular great hero character, the Chris Pratt character? Will it go back to being that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I would love to see a resurgence of Western films. I think that would be the best thing ever, but I'm not getting my hopes up.
But I mean, because within 10 years, because Searchers came out in 1956, and by the late 1960s, you've got like The Wild Bunch coming out, which was definitely one of the darker Sam Peckinpah's Western, just about a bunch of old, dying, just awful outlaws just going out with one big last gory shootout. And I mean, you definitely, it took a major, major turn from, you know, Bonanza that everybody could sit and watch on TV.
Yeah, the Leprechaun episode of Bonanza. Yeah, it came a long way from the 4th of July, or the St. Patrick's Day episode of Bonanza. That's for sure. I don't think that they've gotten out of the dark, brooding, violent Western style yet. I think that's still very much a thing, and I don't.
Oh yeah.
I would like to see it go back, at least a little bit, but I don't know. I guess I just keep my hopes up for that Magnificent Seven, that Magnificent Seven remake. That's my best chance.
For just kind of a fun.
Yeah, because it's definitely not happening with The Revenant or Hateful Eight at all.
What about the, oh man, what's it called? The Adam Sandler Netflix Western.
Ooh, yeah. Sinister Six? Is that what it's called?
No.
That's the Spider-Man. That's the Spider-Man thing.
It's like the Ridiculous Six.
Ridiculous Six. Yeah. I'm thinking that's going to be a lot like Pixels, and I probably will never watch it. I'll be honest. I mean, I might watch it if I, like, you know, have nothing else to do and my Xbox breaks. But, you know, maybe I'll watch it.
I was really interested to see that was getting made after kind of the bomb of, was it A Million Ways to Die in the West?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting, Netflix must know something that we don't know. They're not telling us something. I think a lot of people like to hate on Adam Sandler movies, but then they secretly, in their free time, go on Netflix and just binge watch all of the bad ones. And I think Netflix knows that.
It feels like for the past few years that there's just this trend of continuing to throw money at Adam Sandler regardless of what he pitches you, which I don't know if they're... I mean, I assume they're still making money. I don't know anyone who's seen... you know, Grown Ups 2, or that one when he went to Africa with Drew Barrymore. You've seen both of those, or just...
I've seen both of those.
how were they?
They're enjoyable. Here's what I'm going to say. If you, as a person, actually go and, like, seek out these things and watch them, then chances are you're going to enjoy it. You're not going to go out and be like, oh my gosh, I have to see this movie with Drew Barrymore and this Blended. It's called Blended. You're not going to go look for it unless you know for a fact that it's what you're going to want to watch. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very niche thing. And apparently, a lot of people feel that way. I mean, yeah, I'll be the first person to say that they're not great, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to watch them.
Well, and I'm not going to downshoot Ridiculous Six on the... basis that I think that the Western comedy is a bad choice, because I think Blazing Saddles is one of the best comedies ever made. So,
oh, I 100% agree.
Something within the genre works, but it might. I mean, maybe these just aren't working because, I mean, when Blazing Saddles came out, it was at the end of this, you know, long 30-40 year stretch of nothing but Westerns. And so everybody knew the Western and they were ready to make fun of it. So maybe, you know, a lot of people in our generation just don't know it enough to enjoy laughing at it.
I would agree. I would also say, on top of that, I think that we have this addiction to remaking old things that were loved. Mm-hmm. And it's very rare nowadays that you see something like the Westerns that do get made that are like worth watching are the things that are original, either are original or aren't a remake of something. And they're rare. That only comes up like once or twice a year. And mm-hmm. maybe, okay, with the exception of Bone Tomahawk, I guess three times this year, it's something that's not remade or, you know, a shift or like a play on something else. And I think that might be, like, there's a lot of things that are remade. And they need to, if they're going to bring back the Western films, if there's going to be a resurgence, they have to make more original things. It can't just be, we've all seen Magnificent Seven. Like, it's nothing new. But, I mean, I'm still going to watch it, don't get me wrong. I watch Adam Sandler movies, of course I'm going to watch Magnificent Seven, the remake, but it is what it is.
I mean, that being said, everyone, my dad and my dad's friends and everyone that I knew who was into Westerns got so mad when the Coen brothers announced True Grit. And I mean, a lot of them, it took a while. One of our really good family friends is a huge He's a huge John Wayne fan. He's a big Western fan and World War II movies. And that's about all he watches are World War II films and Westerns. And it took him a while. Like, right after he had seen it, he would go, okay, yeah, you know, Matt Damon was definitely better as LaBeouf than Glenn Campbell. And yeah, maybe the girl was better, but I don't know about Jeff Bridges. But this past summer, I was actually visiting with him, and he kind of looked at me and he goes, you know what? I think, looking back now, I think I like the True Grit remake better than the original. And it took a long time for him to admit that, but I mean, I thought that walking out of the theater, and that's coming from, I grew up on the original True Grit, but the Coen brothers knocked out of the park with theirs.
The Coen brothers knock everything out of the park.
That's very true.
Yeah, they might be the exception. Mm-hmm. I will say I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Love Glenn Campbell. Love old country music. Not a fan of... I like the original True Grit, but... It doesn't beat the Coen brothers remake. And I saw that Christmas Eve when it came out at midnight. And that might have been the greatest midnight premiere I think I've been to. And that's saying a lot. But it's one of those things you walk out and you're like, wow.
Well, and John Wayne, you know, John Wayne was such a personality that you could throw him into a movie and have kind of weak supporting cast, and he would carry it. And I think, I want to say, maybe just the Coens, but I want to say as an industry, we've evolved past that, and we realize that your supporting cast, on the most part, needs to be strong, too. That is definitely one of the redeeming qualities. Head-to-head, you can argue John Wayne versus Jeff Bridges, but you cannot debate the fact that the supporting cast of the remake of True Grit is much stronger than the original.
Wholeheartedly. And I think you had to, if you're going to have someone play John Wayne's character in a remake of a movie, you have to go with someone very iconic. And I think Jeff Bridges might have been the best person they could have gone with.
Oh, yeah.
Like, without a doubt.
All right, let's move into Eastwood. Let's work our way up.
It's working our way up into Clint Eastwood. I'm secretly hoping they remake all of his movies with his son, because I think that would be the best possible thing. And I know I just went on a rant about how remakes aren't great, but for this, I take back everything I just said, just for his movies alone.
Yep. I'm
interested to see where his son goes. I know that... Like, it didn't start off great with a Nicholas Sparks movie, but the dude he's a good actor. He's got it.
I've not seen him act. He's a gorgeous human being, but I'll say that. But
man crush.
Yeah, I haven't seen him act yet. But yeah, the first time I saw a picture of him,
he looks just like, oh my God. He looks just like Clint. It's terrifying. It looks just like Quint. It is almost like exact match, like a clone. It is not. It's kind of true. Like, it freaks you out a little bit when you first see him. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's so many movies I could talk about for Clint Eastwood. It's almost not even like Outlaw Josie Wales. The Man on a Pale Horse, Pale Rider. That movie is amazing. Pale Rider is one of my favorites. Kelly's Heroes. I know it's not a Western, but oh, there we go. Two Mules for Sister Sarah.
What about Paint Your Wagon?
I was about to say Paint Your Wagon. It's Hang 'Em High. I mean, we got Hang 'Em High.
You gotta give him props for Paint Your Wagon for playing against type. I mean,
yeah, very much so.
He was coming off the Morricone. Trilogy, or I always call it the Morricone trilogy when he just wrote the music, the Sergio Leone trilogy, like where he didn't talk at all, and or barely talks, and then he goes into Paint Your Wagon and just starts singing for the whole film. So,
dude, I'm just saying, if they started with a Paint Your Wagon remake, wouldn't be surprised. First off, second off, his son will definitely play his character. Third off. It is what it is at this point. If they're going to make an Adam Sandler Western, then why not make a Paint Your Wagon remake? I mean, there's so many So many things. It's definitely like 100% a darker shift from where we were just talking about, but.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, it's the shift from, it's not just shifting away from John Wayne, it's shifting away from John Ford, because together, like John Wayne and John Ford, even as Ford started getting more cynical and a little darker towards the end of his career with The Searchers and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, I still think he still had that kind of American idealism that just kind of went, as soon as he was done with it, it just kind of went away, and we started realizing that you know, a lot of the cowboys were, you know, the good and bad, the ugly. They were criminals and murderers, and
yeah, they went west for a reason. Yeah, they weren't. Yeah. They didn't stay home. They went out and, you know, did what they wanted to do, and there's a reason why they did that. It's not. Yeah. It was to make money. And to, you know, be a rebel, essentially.
You kind of have this shift where John Ford thought that, for John Ford, the West represented, you know, untapped potential. You could go out to the West and make America anything you wanted it to be, because there were no laws. You could do whatever you wanted in like a really positive way. You could make a new life for yourself. And that's why a lot of times in John Ford films, the end, kind of the ideal is to ride off into the wilderness and build, you know, a cabin in the wilderness and live on your own. And then after him, I think the shift became more towards the West representing no laws, meaning, you know, break them, do whatever you want. There aren't any laws. So.
Yeah, I think that shift away from like manifest destiny to complete lawlessness, I think that is really well represented. I just saw not long ago a Slow West. Have you seen Slow West with Michael Fassbender?
I actually just bought it like yesterday, so I haven't had the chance to watch it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it.
It's a great mix of both of those themes. There's characters that are basically, they're good men, but they're definitely there for a darker purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also these characters that have done bad things but have gone west in hopes of like finding a better life for themselves, and like, you know, just not living that life that they're running away from. And I think that it's a really interesting, if you are interested at all in what we're talking about and you're listening to the show, go watch Slow West. You will not be disappointed. Great performances for everyone. I mean, every single person. Yeah, that's, I'll talk about it more later in my suggestions to watch, but there's my little pitch for Slow West.
Well, and while we're talking Clint Eastwood, it's kind of a nice little segue, but also one of my favorite Clint Eastwood films is I think we can give him a lot of credit for keeping the genre alive with Unforgiven, because I think by 92, culturally, we felt like we had seen everything that the Western had to offer, and he brought us this entirely new, went even darker than any Western had gone before, and brought us this entirely new thing. And I, the 90s were not a great era for the genre, but Unforgiven is definitely one of the really good ones.
Yeah, I would agree. I, they're filming that new Clint Eastwood movie here in town right now in Atlanta, the one with Tom Hanks, Sully. Mm-hmm. My hope is that Clint sees the Oscar buzz for the two Western movies that are, you know, worthy of such awards, potentially. And I really hope he returns and makes one great, like, one, if he's going to make one last, like, his last movie, I hope so badly that it's just, like, one epic Western movie.
Mm.
That would be the icing on the cake, I think. Because, I mean, honestly, if you look at his career, he either has to go out with a Western movie or like a great gritty cop drama. Like, mm-hmm. It's got to be something. It can't be a Paint Your Wagon. That's what I'm trying to say. It can't be a Paint Your Wagon, and it definitely can't be Jersey Boys. That's all I have to say. What a career. Clint Eastwood. Man. I mean, honestly, like, you think you understand it, and there's like, I thought that I knew a lot of Clint Eastwood movies, and then I look on the, like, IMDb, man, so many things I just forgot about. High Plains Drifter, Forgot about it. Hang 'em high.
Hang 'em high. I was just about to say, I love Hang 'em High. That's a really good one.
Man, there's so many good movies.
Yep.
That's, well, then, that's why people binge watch Clint Eastwood movies. Right there.
Yep.
What were you saying? And then there's what?
You know, if we get up around, oh man, what movie was I just talking about? Unforgiven. Late 80s, early 90s. I mean, there were a few, kind of like now, there's occasionally some really good ones. Like, I really enjoy Young Guns.
Ooh,
that's Young a fun Guns. One. And I love Tombstone. Tombstone is such a good movie.
But, that was probably my favorite Val Kilmer movie of all time. Besides Willow. Besides Willow. That Tombstone.
He's so good. Every time I watch Tombstone, I'm so sad that he's not. I just get filled with sadness that he's not working as much as he should be.
I'm telling you, dude. True Detective season 3. The Val Kilmer season. I'm calling it right now. He's coming back.
I just want a TV series where a continuing detective dark comedy where he plays Gay Perry from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh, that's the perfect world. That's the perfect world. Dude, I mean, okay, so I'm talking about Val Kilmer. Let's not forget about Kurt Russell, Sam Elliott, everyone's favorite on our show, especially the Bad Movie Book Club. Bill Paxton,
yep. That's such a good movie.
Powers Booth, one of the greatest Western actors of all time.
I don't know if we've got time to go into my love
Deadwood.
Deadwood.
I could do a whole episode about Deadwood.
We might have to set up a Deadwood episode. Powers Booth is so good.
Can that be okay? We're gonna pitch it now. Soft pitch. Bad Movie Book Club. Talking about Deadwood as a series. I would love it.
Maybe we'll set up an HBO original series episode and grab Ben. Ben would be down for that.
I think Ben would definitely be down for that.
We'll keep that. We'll Brandon keep that would in too. The running.
Yeah. Powers Booth. Freaking Stephen Lang is in this movie. Thomas Hayden Church?
Yeah, Thomas Hayden Church is one of the the first couple Goonies that get shot in that first showdown.
Man, Thomas Hayden Church he was in another Western that I watched, but it was like a miniseries. What was that? He was in a miniseries, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was called.
I mean, that does... That kind of brings up TV West. I mean, with Deadwood, with the Lonesome Dove TV films.
Oh man, Lonesome Dove.
Also, I actually really enjoyed the and this counts as a Western, but I really enjoyed the History Channel Hatfield and McCoy miniseries.
Yes,
did you see that one?
I love that. I love that. It was
Kevin Costner and Bill Paxton.
Kevin Costner, and then one of the guys, one of the leads from Narcos. That was one of his big breaks, was that show. Man.
And also, I really enjoyed, speaking of Powers Booth, I really enjoyed Hatfields and McCoys because he was actually a good guy for once. You remember he was one of the ones who was like, we need to end this. This is crazy. And everybody else was like, no, we're not going to end this. We hate them.
No, we're going to kill everyone. Man, yeah, that was truly a great, I wish History Channel did, two or three of those miniseries every year, because I would watch all of them, I would watch every single one, and they kind of, got their niche with Hatfields and McCoys, and I think that by getting Paxton and Kevin Costner to sign on was not only an amazing combination, was a, potentially the best combo you could have gotten for something like that. Because that's two people that, Bill Paxton, great actor. But, man, Kevin Costner in a, That is absolute, that's gold casting. Yep. That is gold casting.
And, was I going to say? Oh, this wasn't History Channel. This is actually on Discovery, but I also really... when I was in college, the Discovery Channel miniseries Klondike came out.
Yeah.
It was the first thing... my roommate and I watched it because it was the first thing Richard Madden had done after being killed off of Game of Thrones. Spoiler alert.
Red Wedding, spoilers.
And we actually... Like, we never watched TV in my apartment in college. You did, like, Hulu later. But we were so hooked into Klondike that we watched it. We sat down and watched it live on TV every night. And I remember one night, like, someone texting us and to come out to a bar. And we just texted back and we're, you know, no, we're watching Klondike's on tonight. It was weird. But yeah, that was a really fun one, too. That had... Tim Roth was the bad guy in that one. Tim Blake Nelson was really good.
Tim Blake Nelson, man, super nice guy. Great actor, yep. Super nice guy, gotta say.
Well, and Sam Shepard was kind of the, you know, in every Western, you've got the smart, he's either a doctor or a preacher or something in town who's smart and is the only one who knows how to play it safe. And he's always telling the protagonist, like, you don't need to make this guy mad. And then the protagonist always does it. And that was Sam Shepard in this one. He was really good.
Yeah, I think it's not fair to talk about miniseries Westerns on TV, especially modern ones, without talking about Into the West, the greatness that was Into the West. You want to talk about a cast? Dude. Some definitely some people that are lesser known names, but they deliver so well. That story, it was man, that was something that really reinvigorated my love for Western movies. I loved
Into the West. So much stuff for people to choose from.
Honestly, there is.
Now I think we're pretty caught up. We can so that's the brief Thomas and Hunter history of the Western genre. So what does that mean for us? Right now, in 2015.
It means we have two potentially Best Picture nominated Western movies. And I couldn't be happier, to be honest with you.
Yeah, man.
I couldn't be. Yeah. I've read a pretty good portion of The Revenant, the novel, already. Mm-hmm. And, man, the level of hype and excitement that I feel for that movie, it's not as much as I feel for Star Wars, but it's right up there. It's close.
It's close, yeah.
It's close. I am hoping for not only Iñárritu's sake, but also for Leonardo that movie just completely wins everything it's nominated for. I hope it sweeps.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess for anyone out there who is not well informed about Revenant, we've been talking about it, but it's you know, it's Alejandro Iñárritu's follow up to Birdman, which is enough. To, you know, that's enough hype right there for any film. And then you've also got, you know, the Emmanuel Lubezki is the DP on it. Dude. Which is, I mean, from what I've heard, he's pretty much guaranteed to be going for 3 cinematography Oscars in a row, which is going to be unprecedented.
I think he's got it in the bag, just judging from the trailer alone. If you could give awards to trailers, then yeah, he's definitely got it.
So that's crazy. 3 in a row. What's that? It's Gravity, Birdman, The Revenant.
And all three very different styles, very different absolutely. Movies. It's impressive. The dude is at the top of his game.
Man. And then we've got a small but very good cast. You've got Tom Hardy and Donald Gleason, who is in everything. Very happy to see him. Very happy to see him being successful. But if you're not already a fan of Donald Gleason, you will pretty soon be saying, "Hey, who's that ginger kid that's in all these movies that I'm watching?"
Dude, he's like little Chris Pratt. He's like Chris Pratt. Him and Chris Pratt do a movie together, then the world explodes because they're in every movie. It's like Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's terrifying.
And then, of course, we've got the big maybe will Leo win his Oscar finally?
If okay, here's what I'm going to say, having read the book.
Mm-hmm.
If they do everything to this character like they do in the book, which looks like they are, and they're adding more bad things that happen to him, there's no way. If he pulls off the performance, he has got it in the bag. No one will hold a candle to him. I'm sorry, all you Spotlight fans. I'm sorry, all you people that love The Martian just as much as I do. He's got it. It's like, it's I would say, if not a lock, will be a lock come Christmas Day when everyone sees it, when it goes, is it go wide on Christmas or is it limited release?
I think it's wide Christmas.
It's coming. This is the year. The prophecy, that's prophecy fulfilled.
That's super exciting because he's been robbed many a time. I think he's definitely one of the best actors of our generation, and he always seems to go up against somebody who, you know, for some reason is just a little bit better, or just like needs, you know, sometimes we'll go up against somebody who is like older and has a more established career and they feel like deserves it more, but after all the being robbed all those times, hopefully this will be the one that he gets it for.
I think it could be. You know, the other Western Leonardo DiCaprio performance that I really love was Django. He was great in Django.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. He was phenomenal. He was fantastic in Django. And I think that needed to be celebrated a little more than it was. Because that was flawless.
Honestly, acting. Going back... Well, I would actually say on my first viewing, when I walked out of that, I thought that he deserved the Oscar the most out of any performance in that film. Going back to it a few times now, I agree that Christoph Waltz does a very incredible job, especially because we just weren't, you know, all we knew Christoph Waltz at that point was a bad guy, and here he brings this insanely likable character.
He does.
And,
he's so charming.
And it was a tough run, but I do, especially for that, you know, the now famous story about Leo actually cutting his hand during the big scene at the dinner table and then smearing his bloody hand all over Olivia Pope. and everyone in that room just going with it. That's the craziest part. Not just him continuing the scene with a bloody hand, but everyone else not breaking and going along with it too.
Yeah, and I think that he took how everyone viewed that story leaking in that instance, and he was like, wow, maybe I should just torture myself for real, making a whole movie, every scene I should just be miserable and wish that I was, like, you know, dead. And so he decided, yeah, I'm definitely doing The Revenant. A chance to torture myself the whole time we're making a movie? Sign me up. Because, okay, it looks like that was a vicious, grueling shoot. Like, I've read the articles mm-hmm. online about everything. That movie will end up, like, they'll make a documentary about the making of that movie, and it will be great.
I hope so. I hope they were doing a lot of filming behind the scenes.
I hope they were, but then you got to think, that's a whole other crew that's just as miserable as everyone else. Like, that's a lot of misery. I don't know if I want that for people, but man, I would watch it for sure. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. Keaton's leaning back going, you know, I might not have gotten the Oscar, but I think I picked the best Iñárritu film to be signed on to. I just had to hang out in a New York theater the whole time.
Oh, man. I mean, okay, he was great. He was great in Birdman, but he is not Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant. You'll know at Christmas. Everyone will know.
Since Brandon's not here to fight back, Brandon is I don't want to do too much Oscar predicting, but I know Brandon thinks there's some Oscar buzz around Spotlight, and I just think I saw Spotlight, I really enjoyed it, but I think if Keaton does win the Oscar for that, I think it's more of a "we're sorry we didn't give you the Birdman Oscar" than it is an actual an Oscar for Spotlight.
What a slap in the face to Leo. They're like, sorry.
If Keaton even gets nominated, it's going to be for supporting. So Leo's got the lead nomination for sure. But he probably won't even be competing with Keaton.
He's a lock. Let's not. It's not. It's not a maybe.
Well, we're talking Django. We want to talk the other Christmas Western.
Ooh, I'll let you lead into it because you seem more excited than I am.
Well, I think what's pretty exciting about this is we, for a very long time, we weren't supposed to, this film was not supposed to get made. It's Hateful Eight, of course, Quentin Tarantino's new Western, and it started as a script after Django, which is kind of a quasi Western, it's a Southern Western. I know Tarantino said he really enjoyed it and he wanted to explore just a full-blown Western. So he wrote the script for this. For a lot of his you know, older people he's worked with, of course he's Tarantino, it's actors he's worked with in the past, and wrote the script, sent it out to all of them, and the script ended up on the internet.
It happens.
And it was immediately after he had just sent it out to these specific leading cast members. So he got really upset because it meant that it was somebody who was a very close friend of his that let it out. And it ended up coming out that it was an agent, not one of the actors. But he got very, very mad and just made a blatant statement that he was going to throw the script out since it had been leaked. Everybody had read it online. He was just done with it. And after about a year of a lot of buzz, it's continued to be circulated around the internet and a lot of buzz, he finally agreed to do a live stage read through with the intended cast members. And I remember I knew somebody who got tickets to it. It was the big event. It was really hard to get tickets to. They had a container to put your cell phones in at the door because they just didn't want the leaking to continue. And it just, all the buzz when people were coming out of it, everyone loved it. So I guess a lot of ego inflating managed to talk Quentin into actually going into production. They did it, and now we're finally gonna get to see it on Christmas, Hateful Eight.
See, when you build it up like that, I kind of want to see it more. you should do that thing where they, you know how before Tomorrowland, the director came on and prefaced the movie. He was like, "Oh, I want to watch." If you did that before Hateful Eight, I would go watch it. Like the whole trailer should just be you explaining it. I mean, okay, I watched the Hateful Eight trailer. It looks good. I'm excited for it, but maybe I just have that Django like hangover, and I'm just, I don't know. I think that might be it, but there's just something about it. It could be that I'm still trying to process how I feel about Django Unchained, or it could be that I'm super excited about Revenant. But I will say this movie does have an amazing cast, an amazing director. Sorry, Ben. And it could be great.
I think part of the, because I feel the same. Not exactly the same way, but I did feel it was kind of the least excited I had been for that. When I was watching the trailer and I was getting excited for the movie, it was for those reasons, you know, the fact that it was almost not made and not necessarily for the film. And I think part of that I'm just now realizing is that the last two Tarantino films to have come out, I've been so excited for these new cast members that he's working with.
Yeah.
And this time he's doing one with literally everyone he's worked with before. Yeah, and Channing Tatum. So, I mean, there's not as much of that hype of, you know, Brad Pitt, Michael Fassbender, you know, Leo DiCaprio, Jamie Foxx. There's not as much of that, what's Tarantino going to do with this great actor for this time? Because we know that he works very well with all these people who are in this film, but It does feel kind of, and it's actors he's worked with before and in a genre he's worked with before. So in a way I can see that, you know, it might feel a little stale or something like that.
Yeah. And I think that part of that might've been, it's like, oh, another Tarantino movie with Samuel L. Jackson. Like that, when I heard about it, that's kind of how I felt. But the more I look at it, I think it's a really potentially a great role for Tim Roth. And I'm a big Tim Roth fan. I think that it could be a huge role for him. And Walton Goggins, I think Walton Goggins, like he's due. Walton Goggins.
Oh man, We made it through the TV Western discussion without even bringing up Justified, but
I don't know how we did, because we could have easily talked about that right after Deadwood, but man, Walton Goggins, what a great actor. Great character actor, man. Like, damn, dude brings it.
Yeah, yeah, great in Django.
Yeah, there's a little Tombstone love, got Kurt Russell hanging out in there. Yep. Bruce Dern, man. Bruce Dern, after Nebraska? What a huge jump from Nebraska.
Man. I mean, he wasn't, he did have that very small part in Django.
Did he? I didn't know he was
Django. He was the slave owner that Django was escaping from and who caught Broomhilda. They have a very small scene with him kind of torturing Django after they get caught.
I never realized that. I never realized that at all. You know who I am a little sad won't be back for this?
Who's that?
Is the guy from Miami Vice.
Oh, Don... what's his last? Don...
No, Don Johnson!
Don Johnson. Big Daddy.
Dude, he was phenomenal in Django. Another great character from Django. Like, the slave owners in Django killed it. It was... Mm-hmm. Man, yeah, there's certain people that I wish, if he's going to do, like, an all-star casting for this movie, I wish he would have brought back a few other people. But, that being said, I'm excited for where this is going.
And I'm really excited for him to work with Michael Madsen again, because it's been a long time since we've seen him work with Michael Madsen.
That it has. I think it's going to be good. I wish I knew more about it, because then I think I might be a little more excited and amped up for it. But, you know, to each their own.
So, last thing we want to talk about is something you brought up, and I happen to have studied in college, so I was really excited when you did bring it up. But it's just kind of the idea of how much the Western genre has affected a lot of the other films that we like and that kind of are successful in today's culture. So, specifically, I remember you asked me after seeing Sicario about kind of Western theory and Sicario. The theory behind that is really easy. So Robert Ray has a book called A Certain Tendency in the Hollywood Genre, and his idea is that the Western is always just has two characters, the outlaw versus the official hero, and usually you'll have them team up. Most Westerns, you'll see the outlaw hero team up with the official hero to accomplish a goal, and then the outlaw hero will, the official hero tries to accomplish the goal by obeying the law, the outlaw hero tries to accomplish the goal by breaking law, and through a perfect union of the two of them, they're able to achieve something for the greater good. And then the outlaw hero has to ride off into the sunset, because as much as we like watching the outlaw hero break the rules, we also kind of know that he can't stick around and break the rules forever. So that was something I didn't even think of watching Sicario, but when you brought it up to me, you know, if you want to talk about that, it works perfectly.
It does work perfectly, because you have Benicio del Toro in an amazing, like, that movie was probably one of my favorite movies of the year by far, and for multiple reasons too, across the board, fantastic film. But it does follow that same trope, but it does it in a way where it doesn't seem... You hardly notice it. Mostly because Benicio del Toro is the law of his own. Mm-hmm. Like, he is his own law. And I think that he has a very specific code that he follows, which it very much mirrors a lot of older traditional Western films. But it does it in a way that's unique to that film alone. And to me, making Emily Blunt's character like such an iconic performance on her part and what she goes through as a character and all that, I could talk about that movie for days. But yeah, I mean, I definitely wholeheartedly agree. Hence me bringing it up the last time we talked about it. But yeah.
Well, and I think probably what was most famous with that, I'm sure most film people out there have heard, you know, somebody goes, "Oh my God, did you know that Star Wars was a Western, and I mean that is something that Lucas had that kind of Lucas definitely had that Western structure in mind when he was writing it, and that's where we get Luke Skywalker and Han Solo from.
Yeah, it's a hero's journey, and Emily Blunt goes through the same thing. She starts off in Sicario. She starts off being that, you know, not really a beat cop, but she's in her specific area. She's doing her thing. She hasn't really, like, been bumped up to that next level of what she's, like, she's basically a lower-level DEA drug administration, like, drug SWAT cop. But then she gets thrown into this world that is like her own, but there's basically no rules, and it's just very organized chaos. But she's there for a specific reason. She doesn't know it until later. A lot of spoilers here for Sicario. I'm sorry about that.
It's been out. We told the audience multiple times to watch it.
Yeah,
so.
If you're a fan of our show and you're listening to this right now, then you should have already seen Sicario way before now. So I don't feel bad about ruining it for you at all. But yeah, it's very much that hero's journey. Almost to a T. Almost to an exact T. But it's very much mirrored. There's not that, like, Luke, I'm your father moment, but there's definitely a little bit of a... The play between Benicio del Toro and Emily Blunt, it's like a well-trodden path. It's not something that is like, wow, this is really unique to this movie. It's there for a reason, but it works, and it works for a reason.
Well, and you have del Toro there, and I think part of what's really interesting about that film is that it realizes what it's doing, because it realizes that coming into a film like that, we want the outlaw hero to break the law. You know, watching Lethal Weapon, we want Riggs's character to be, you know, the loose cannon. We want him to, because it's fun. That's what we like watching, and we like going, since as a society we generally try not to break the law, we like going to a film and seeing somebody break the law to do good. But Benicio del Toro really toes the line in this one, which is I think is where the film plays with our expectations, and that he's breaking the law to do ultimately what is the greater good, but man, he's brutal and he's dark and he's terrifying.
We don't see what he does to the guy in the torture room, but we have a pretty good idea judging from his body language, what's going to happen. And
it was actually something really interesting for me in the theater was the audience. There's a lot of these kind of really kind of dark, sick jokes that Josh Brolin's character makes regarding torture and killing people. And a lot of people were laughing out loud in the audience. And I found myself just kind of going, I found myself really torn, because some of them were kind of funny, but they were also very extremely dark about violence and torture against people. And so, I think that's where the film kind of plays with us, is that we expect, when we start watching it and we kind of subconsciously realize that it's falling into the Western kind of layout, we expect to just root for the outlaw hero to break the law. But then when we actually see it start happening, we start to be a little unsure, because it's not just, you know, Liberty Valance. It's something a lot more sinister.
It's not just breaking the law. It's like inhumane acts. Mm-hmm. Of violence and just disgust. And I think the way that he's able to build that up without it being like, oh my God, what just happened to this person, is that he doesn't really show it. He waits.
Oh yeah, there's very little on screen violence.
Yeah, like you get a hint of what's going on, but you don't see the full turn towards the end. And when you do see it, it's more profound. And I think that really hits home really well in that film, particularly. It's a great way to work with that Western film trope, if you will.
Speaking of Sicario and people, you know, we talked about a couple of people who are really good Western actors. Have I ever seen John Bernthal in a Western? Because I feel like he'd be great.
John Bernthal in a Western. Let's look. Old IMDb, John Bernthal.
He did the Mob City miniseries.
I never saw Mob City.
Gangster, but
was Mob City good?
It was good. It was fun. It was fun as a miniseries. I probably wouldn't have stuck around for a continuing show, but it was kind of interesting to see Frank Darabont It was kind of like a, hey, sorry I killed you off of Walking Dead, come be on my show type thing. Because everyone who was currently dead on Walking Dead came and did Mob City, so that was fun.
Yeah. So John Bernthal, from what I can tell, has not been in a Western movie. Was in a great HBO miniseries, a.k.a. The Pacific. It was phenomenal in that. He gets... It's okay. The Walking Dead isn't a Western, but it's... He toes the line. He's definitely the outlaw character in The Walking Dead. But he plays that character, or a form of the outlaw, kind of like rough around the edges hero, in a lot of his things. Okay, so Daredevil...
Well, he's about to kill as Punisher.
He's about to destroy as the Punisher, dude. That is a dream casting of mine. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yep. I was... Brandon knows. I've talked to Brandon about it multiple times, how much I wanted a Punisher. I wanted a Punisher Netflix original show. If you're going to go dark, yeah, you're going to go... Yeah, I think this might be it. This might be what gets in that show. Fingers crossed, dude. Fingers crossed, because that... Man, that is a truly great...
It'll be interesting, because the Punisher is one of those people who does the exact same thing. He's an outlaw hero, for sure. And he... does what he thinks is right, even though it gets extremely disturbing sometimes. So
yeah, he's very much that vigilante, very reminiscent of like what we were talking about earlier about Clint Eastwood, very dark vigilante. I'm pretty sure the Punisher origin story is a Clint Eastwood movie made at some point. I'm like 90% sure that is an actual thing. It's very Pale Rider, very Pale Rider. But that being said, Pale Rider is a great movie. I could talk about that for hours on end. But yeah, I would love to see a John Bernthal Western, like just outright Western movie. I don't know what it would be, but man, he would have been great as the villain of the True Grit remake. He would have been really great as one of those guys.
Yeah. Although I love the casting for that. Josh Brolin was awesome.
Josh Brolin's great in everything.
Well, and Barry Pepper was a great casting choice, but also it's just really weird how much he looked like. He reminded me so much of Robert Duvall in that role.
Oh man! Speaking of Josh Brolin in Western movies, how did you feel about the neo Western No Country for Old Men?
Oh, I love No Country for Old Men. I am a huge, huge, huge Cormac McCarthy fan.
Same.
So, I love all of his stuff. I'd love to see... I love all the Pretty Horses film, but I'd love to see a remake just in hopes that they could do the whole Crossing trilogy.
So, dude, Blood Meridian would be amazing.
Who is it? James Franco has the rights to Blood Meridian.
Are you serious?
He's had him for a couple years, and he's just never gotten around to doing anything.
That is
with it.
Scary. That is terrifying. Because like, I just want him to do it justice. You know, I don't want him to mess that up.
I think that's what his holdup is. I think he bought the rights knowing that he wanted to do something really good with it, and he's just waiting to make it right.
He should
be great.
Oh my god, dude! Can you? That whole trilogy, man, that could be it for me. If they remade All the Pretty Horses, which was a great... I really enjoyed that movie, to be fair. Matt Damon and the guy from Lucas Black, man. Lucas Black when he was young and like actually doing stuff. That was something I enjoyed, other than like his small cameo in Fast 7. Yeah, man, that's a great movie.
The reason I said I'd like to see it remade is I actually like The Crossing even more than
All
the Pretty Horses.
I haven't read The Crossing.
What happens in The Crossing is it's completely different, not related to All the Pretty Horses at all. About a different character and his little brother crossing into Mexico. But then what happens is in the third book, Cities of the Plain, the main character from All the Pretty Horses and the main character from The Crossing meet up and kind of take on Mexico together.
Whoa.
And so that's why I would really love to see kind of, you know, a remake so that we could get that crossover at the end. But
does Franco own the rights to any of those now, or who?
I don't think so. I think it's just Blood Meridian. I don't know who owns the rights to.
Man. I'm holding out hope for that, because that news, you just gave me the best news of all time, that is potentially going to be made. Man.
I love No Country for Old Men. And The Road, I think, is a very good Cormac McCarthy adaptation. We've got a great history of solid Cormac McCarthy adaptations. We have one bad history of a Cormac McCarthy original film. The Counselor?
Oh, no. I'm not talking about The Counselor. Tell me about how much you don't like The Counselor, and then I'll tell you how much I loved the other one I'm going to talk about.
I love Cormac McCarthy as an author, but I don't. The Counselor just felt like a Cormac McCarthy book. People were saying Cormac McCarthy lines, and he needs the Coen brothers. He needs somebody there to translate for him, because as much as I love to read him, it doesn't translate well. Well, and I just thought that The Counselor was just so misguided. There's a really interesting Cormac McCarthy story in there somewhere about a shipment of drugs making its way from Mexico to America and just the trail of bodies that it leaves behind it. But then it just gets bogged down in this Cameron Diaz conspiracy thriller. And she's just, I'm mixed on my opinions of Cameron Diaz, but she is not, whatever talent she has shown us in the past is just not on display in this film. And yeah. I feel like she brings the rest. I mean, it's an incredible cast.
Michael
Fassbender, Javier Bardem, Brad Pitt, Penelope Cruz, and I just feel like everyone is just brought down by this weight that is Cameron Diaz's performance in the film. And then it ends up, kind of spoilers, but kind of the big twist is that she's been pulling the strings behind all the stuff that's going wrong with this drug shipment. And it's such a huge letdown when you find that out, because that just means that you have to, you know, put up with her character throughout the climax.
The anti-Sicario, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, yeah. Okay, so the other Cormac McCarthy movie that I thought you were talking about, but you're not, The Sunset Limited, was an HBO original film. Have you seen it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I actually really enjoyed it. It was, a lot of people didn't, and I understand, I see what you're saying, people that didn't like it, but really interesting, and it wasn't that traditional, like, very doom and gloom Cormac McCarthy. Like, there's definitely some of it there, because it's dealing with suicide and a man attempting to kill himself, but it's very, it's like both sides of the same coin. Like, you get a lot of the, like, not so much Cormac McCarthy-isms of his usual self. A lot of the All the Pretty Horses before it got real dark. But, man, what a great film. It's not related to Westerns at all, but I just feel like I had to
say that. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But, yeah, that one is a good, you know, example of him writing his own stuff for screen. But, yeah, for The Counselor, when I was watching it, and there's a couple of these long monologues that characters go off on that I would have loved to have read in a Cormac McCarthy book, but I'm just sitting there watching the film going, someone, a good screenwriter would have cut this, would have made him cut this.
And yeah,
he just, as much as I respect him, he needs an experienced screenwriter there to be the go-between him and the film itself.
So you're saying dream team, Aaron Sorkin, Cormac McCarthy, Blood Meridian. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Can you imagine?
With Inarritu directing.
Oh, man. Lubezki. Man, that would win gold. That would win every category by far, I think. Okay, so someone we didn't talk about at all, which is a shame, Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones, yep.
Look, Tommy Lee Jones made some great Western films. A lot of the ones we've talked about already. Most notably, I think his most iconic role ever, Lonesome Dove. But, I mean, you could argue that Men in Black was an iconic role, but Lonesome Dove, like, come on, doesn't hold a candle.
Well, and he's such a good choice for No Country for Old Men, because he represents the Old West.
Oh yeah, you know,
the West that we like in Westerns, when people kill for a reason. And so that's why that last scene is so heartbreaking, when he's, you know, when he realizes that it's not a country for old men anymore, and he just kind of hangs up his hat, because he just doesn't even understand all the violence and craziness that's going on.
Yeah, man.
You know, the fact that they cast somebody iconic like Tommy Lee Jones in that role is what makes it all the more depressing in that ending.
I would 100% agree. And in a dream world, that movie takes place in the same shared universe as Sicario, because that that circle of life is my spirit animal at the moment. That is that is perfection. That oh man, yeah, Lonesome Dove, man, I binge watched the whole thing while I was in Colorado working on a hay farm, and it was by far the greatest decision I ever made. I'd wake up in the morning. Yeah, dude, I'd walk outside. I was staying in the town where they shot Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh,
and
I
would walk outside in the morning.
Oh, man. How do we not talk about Butch Cassidy and Sundance
Kid? I know. I know. I was hoping we'd get into it with like when we pick our favorites at the end. But, man.
Okay.
Robert Redford. I'm going to talk a little bit about Robert Redford in a little bit. But, man. Oh, man. What a great. That was one of the best moments of my life, I think. I would go to bed at night, really tired. We were working on this hay farm that my friend's grandparents owned. This is a little bit about my life, guys. Okay, so we went out there for a little bit during the summer. They owned a hay farm, and we would work all day and like fix fences and stuff and like shoot prairie dogs. That was our job. It was amazing. And then at night, we would be all tired. We'd hang around, like sit around the campfire, talk, hang out. And then we'd all go our separate ways, go to bed. I was staying in this like trailer, like an RV kind of thing with one of my buddies. And we would just watch Lonesome Dove. Like, we bought it on DVD at the Walmart there in Durango. And we just watched it, like, on end every night. Like, until we passed out. And we'd start back where we were the night before. And in the morning, we wake up and we walk outside and just be surrounded by this, like, amazing vista of mountains just everywhere. And it was phenomenal. Like, that, man, I felt like I was literally living the Western lover's dream. Like, it was the pinnacle of Western fandom, I think, in my life at least. That was the golden moment. And then we went hiking where they shot Butch Cassidy, and that was everything. That was everything.
Alright, let's do our favorites. You know, that you got me thinking. This is gonna be tough because I feel like already talked about my favorites, but
you wanna go with one? One only? You gotta pick your favorite Western of all time?
I might say two. Okay. But one of them will probably be one we've already talked about, so.
Okay. I'm going to do one and one only just for my own sake. But you, give me your first one first.
Well, I feel like we talked about it a little bit, but especially now trying to go into comedy, like I can't say enough how much Blazing Saddles is important in my life. Such a great film. A hilarious film. But if we're talking just straightforward, real Westerns, oh man, I don't even know. There's so many good things to choose from. Oh man, I know that I said that Searchers was my favorite John Wayne performance, but Liberty Valance is probably my favorite Western in itself, just because Jimmy Stewart is probably one of my all-time favorite actors. And I think that's one of his best performances. And just, it's a great film. It's an awesome movie. It's really great performances from two of America's most iconic actors of all time. So, yeah.
I can't fault you on that at all. I can't. Like, there's no way you can refute that as a pick. Which is something to be said for that movie. But if I'm going to pick my favorite Western of all time, I'm going to go with a little bit of something we did not talk about, which is a shame because it's a great movie. Jeremiah Johnson. The Robert Redford movie.
Oh, man. Redford. Oh, man.
Dude.
And I have to let everyone know out there that Liberty Valance was an extremely close pick with Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, because I grew up in a Butch Cassidy. I grew up in a Redford Newman household. We watched.
It's a good household to live in.
We watch Butch Cassidy and The Sting on a very regular basis.
Oh, that's what we did with Jeremiah Johnson. Every time, okay, so my dad and I, when we go hunting on these hunting trips, we would always watch Jeremiah Johnson. It was that thing that like it was so long that you could fall asleep, guaranteed fall asleep at some point in it. And it had these great breaks in the middle, like where there was just like an original score of a song and a break in the middle. Like they knew that you were probably going to fall asleep.
Oh, yeah.
So they're like, we'll let you fall asleep here and then pick it up later. But man, that movie, holy crap. Like, that movie was amazing. And he carries the whole thing. Like, of course, he runs into all these people on the way. And if you want to talk about the hero's journey, That, my friend, is the hero's journey. Like, starts off this, like, completely green little pilgrim, goes up in the mountains, wants to be a fur trapper, like everyone else in our lives. Everyone wants to be the super awesome, like, badass. No one actually really wants to go through with it. But, dude, he sees it through, for better or worse. And it is like, the movie, other than The Natural, like, all-time favorite Robert Redford movie. Yeah, it's close, but Robert, like, that Jeremiah Johnson is the movie for me, I think.
I probably would have to say Sting, but I am just convinced that we will never, as an industry, find a duo who has the chemistry that Redford and Newman had together.
You don't think Stiller Wilson is a good combo?
No, I think I don't know. I think something that's come close in both the acting ability, the chemistry, and the insane good looks are Clooney and Pitt in the first Ocean's 11.
I was about to say the same thing.
Came very close to a Redford Newman dynamic, but oh man, the Sting and Butch Cassidy together, they're just having so much fun. It's so good. Man, I love it. I have to, and you know that's something we debate about a lot in my family, is Butch Cassidy versus the Sting, but I have to go Sting over Butch Cassidy.
I can't fault you. I can't. I'm gonna say Butch Cassidy, but only because of my experience with Butch Cassidy, and that's the only. It's like a personal thing. Same like yours is a personal thing, and I think of that the way that we connected to those movies says a lot for Western films and films in general. Man, what an episode!
We've covered it tonight, man.
We have. This has been great.
The Western is alive and well in American cinema.
We were informative. Yeah, we were informative. We nerded out about things. we literally ran the history of the Western films.
We talked a lot of movies, so if you're out there listening, hopefully you've seen at least some of the films that we talked about. And if not, maybe you've got a little list of films that you do want to see now.
Yeah, a big list. We talked about a lot. We covered a lot. Yeah. But it's been fun. It was fun. I really enjoyed reminiscing about Westerns. You made me think about a lot of Westerns that I completely didn't even think about. There's so many that sometimes you do forget that there's these films that you love that you just, you know, there's so many of them. And this has been good.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, I guess we'll call it an episode. We'll be back soon, hopefully with Ben and Brandon in tow. Or maybe they'll do a few more without us. We'll see.
Yeah, hope you like that Bad Movie Book Club episode if you haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah. And I hope everybody is ready for Anaconda.
Anaconda. It'll squeeze you to death. Man. Owen Wilson. Oh, man. But yeah, man. It's been very good talking about Westerns.
Cool. All right. Everybody have... I don't know when you're listening to this, so I can't say have a good day or have a good night, but have a day.
Have good.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon. Please check us out on, iTunes? Check us out on iTunes. Give us reviews. We really want to hear reviews from you guys to see what we could do better, what you like, what we're doing. Check us out on Medium. Cine Nation Show on Medium. We've got a lot of great articles coming at you from all of us that host the podcast, including Anna, who's got some really great stuff up lately. And then we've got a lot of other writers who are submitting us reviews and analysis and stuff about upcoming films. So it's a great resource. And hit us up on Twitter. I'm Here's a Who with underscores between the words.
And I'm at Hunter Barcroft.
And and our general account is just Cine Nation Show. All right, I think Brandon will be happy that we just covered all the basic ground.
Brandon, I know you were nervous about just Thomas and I doing an episode, but I think we killed it.
They trusted us with something other than Bad Movie Book Club, so...
It's amazing. This is a day that will live in infamy forever.
All right, guys, take it easy.
All right, see ya.